What noise is this? What is this, bright light? I should like it if you could extinguish it post-haste. Who are you? State your purpose in disturbing my rest, or I shall have to call the constable.
I am the ghost of sci-fi past.
I suppose that explains your strange appearance, lacking in color, strange face makeup, and over-exaggerated movements. Well, now that I know who you are, now you must answer my second question. Why are you here?
All this month, you will be visited by three spirits of science fiction. We shall show you that science fiction is more than you think.
Humbug!
We shall see. I am the first vision of the past. The next one will be the ghost of the sci-fi present.
And I suppose the third one is the future. Get on with it.
The third spirit is always in flux. He may come as one, he may come as many, he may come as he, he may come as she, or a multitude of both. You shall surely know upon the future's arrival.
Gracious, is there no way to avoid this annoyance?
No!
Oh, gracious, vengeful spirit. Well, let's be on with it then.
Sci-Fi Melody, Symptom 134, Metropolis, the Ghost of Sci-Fi Past. This week's episode of Sci-Fi Melody brought to you by The Comintern. Rise up, brothers and workers of the world. Throw off your chains, comrade.
Back to the comrade, eh?
This one probably got the approval of Joseph Stalin.
Probably.
It was this close. The music was very good on this. However, it's a little known fact that it was this close to being changed a bit.
To the communist national anthem.
Yeah. This was really close to being the soundtrack.
Dude, the whole movie.
That would make way more sense. This film was rife with communist propaganda.
Which is insane, because would it surprise you to know that none other than Joseph Goebbels.
I don't know. I probably screwed it up.
And Adolf Hitler. The Führer himself
loved this film.
Strange. It was co-opted.
He tried to recruit the filmmaker and director to make the National Socialist Party's propaganda films, except he fled to America within 4 months of being offered it.
Wisely.
This is a confusing film, because the first 75% of this is... It's like it could have been written
workers
by Karl Marx.
Workers of the world unite.
Well, this film's
it's
even
a
more...
a communist wet dream for the first 75% of it.
Well, let's also get to this. This film we watched is the full one.
That's true.
This is the 2 hour and something long film by him. And this film has been cut down many a time. And they just recently rebuilt it to the 2 hour masterpiece of... confusing nonsense at times. This thing makes really no sense at times, at least for me.
It's weird. And I think part of that is that the screenwriter who did the screenplay for this was the director's wife. So, you know, it was directed by Fritz Lang, and it was written by, I'm going to mess this up, Thea von Harbau, which is his wife. And it seems like in some analyses that she might have snuck some pro-Nazi themes in there underneath, you know, her husband's watchful eye. And I think that's why there's some confusion in this, because at the end of it, you start to see that the full-on workers' rebellion falls flat in its face and actually does more damage than good. But... Let's get back to some of the story behind this. So this is a silent movie based off a 1925 novel that was made in 1927.
One of the last silent films, too.
One of the last silent films. There are so many different running times. The original is 153 minutes. You had an edited version in 1927 that was down to 116. You had a USA version that was somewhere between 105 and 107. A UK version was 128.
You know, that was, can I mention something here? Because that was part of the the reception. Let's see. H.G. Wells, he accused it of foolishness, cliche, platitude, and muddlement about mechanical progress and progress in general, calling it derivative of Frankenstein and the Karel Čapek's RUR, which is the first story of about a robot.
He also claimed that The Sleeper Awakes, it was derivative of that, which he wrote.
Yeah. Yep, he did. And then he called it quite the silliest film. But then who was it here? The New Yorker called it unconvincing and overlong, faulting much of the plot as laid on with a terrible Teutonic heaviness and an unnecessary amount of philosophizing in the beginning that made the film as soulless as the city of its tale. He also called the acting uninspired with the exception of Brigitte Helm. Wow. And then I know the Encyclopedia of Science Fiction calls the story trite.
Yeah. Well,
trite and long, since we're...
I mean, they tried so many different ways to recut this film, insert the tiles in different orders. You have so many different versions of this film, and the current version that we watched was based on a restoration from a damaged 16mm cut that was found in Argentina in 2008. This film has more lives than a cat. It just doesn't go away.
No.
And I can understand why. I mean, there's so much symbolism in here. It's like an onion of awesomeness that you can keep peeling through. And it does feel like there's competing messages in here.
Well, I read that Fritz Lang wanted to make a movie that was the best thing in the world at the time, rivaled Hollywood, beat Hollywood, and he did it. As far as technical concerns, he made what was the greatest film of its time.
Well, now,
he made the Avengers Endgame of its time, just in terms of technical.
I would agree with you for the simple fact that, okay, the special effects, amazing.
For the time, yeah.
Well, again, for the time. I'm not saying now because, again, it's black and white.
It's hard to hold a candle. Yeah.
But yeah, special effects, the score, everything seemed like it was professionally done and extremely high quality work.
And you got to remember, all this stuff they did without computers. The fade scenes, the cut scenes, that was all
done by hand.
And, you know, superimposing images over each other. I mean, this film cost 5.3 million Reichsmarks or $18 million in 2009 money. I don't know what that comes to today.
That's a lot, though.
That's pounds. I'm sorry. They didn't even change to dollars. It was a bomb. It made 75,000 Reichsmarks back in the box office.
Well, you know, it's a tough sell. I mean, if you consider, can we talk about the style for a minute?
Sure thing.
Yeah.
It's German expressionist art, which is, it relied heavily on Art Deco, which I'm a fan of. But expressionism, the whole, if I can summarize it in the easiest sense, film expressionism is to have some very vivid and strange images which would invoke an extreme emotional reaction. And that it does. I mean, I think the worst scene for me that it invoked such a reaction was when the Maria robot is dancing and all the guys are watching her and like breathing heavy and like sweating over her. And it freaks you out. At least it did me. They looked really, maybe it was the makeup, maybe it was the smiles, I don't know, but it elicited that reaction. And then of course they start fighting each other over her. And then
it's a disturbing reaction.
It is. And then the scene where Robot Maria is giving a speech, let's rise up. And it shows everybody's eyeballs looking at her. And then you see her in the corner looking all deranged with the raccoon eyes, as you called it, Scott. These were designed to elicit this shock. And, well, it works. And that's kind of German expressionism. There's a lot. That was a whole thing.
Well, they also, again, I don't know about German expressionism as much as you seem to know, but
not that much. Don't worry.
Okay. There's also that scene in the catacombs where it's standing a very weird, you know, Christian symbolism going on.
Oh yeah. With weird long angles. That's part of it.
Yeah. And Christians, you know, the crosses, and then she's talking about the Tower of Babel, and it's like, again, this is part of the issue, I think, I had with this film was because of sometimes the style itself wasn't the problem, but this story that they went with, I had trouble following it at times because it just seemed to go off on weird tangents that I never seemed to either complete or even talk about.
For example, you're probably right. I just don't remember.
It's hard to, I guess, explain because they're just going down different things. Like, why is this happening or why is that happening?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. I mean, obviously, some of it is artistically chosen. Like, why do you have to move these clock hands in a certain order?
Oh, yeah. Why does the machine work that way?
Because
they need it to.
Right.
I actually like that. It was simplistic to show you the drudgery of factory life.
Having worked in a machine shop, I was able to empathize with that because there were days where it felt like that, especially when he shouted, "Father, will 10 hours never end?"
Oh, and yeah.
It's like, yep.
I've done 12-hour manual labor shifts. They suck.
Especially when you're just doing the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Over and over.
Again and again and again.
Yeah. By the end, you're on autopilot. You aren't even thinking.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. And you don't look at the clock.
The closest comparison I can make to that is, I did work as a pin setter, a pin chaser at a bowling alley, but a lot of that was just sitting around waiting for something to break down. But sometimes I'd have to sit on top of the machine and manually cycle it or something, you know, all night. And that was only 4 hours. You're just sitting back there, you know, either because the ball return's broken, manually throwing the ball back. And it got 4 hours got mind numbing. I remember any work that's repetitive over and over again gets mind numbing. The longest shifts I ever had was working at a Burger King. And sitting there,
you were there for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. And I was like, and I still remember how mind numbingly long an 8 hour shift there would feel like.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay, burger. I had a science teacher who once said, you know,
is it Manak?
Manak. He used to, his famous line was, "All right, you can go to school and be intelligent and get a good job, or you can learn to do one pickle, two pickle, cheese in the middle."
That's Manak.
Yep.
But I understand again what the symbolism was though. This film is very good at, without using words, because again, this is a silent film, portraying quite a bit of emotion.
Right.
And getting you to think and see just with the visuals what you should be seeing. The mind-numbingly tedium of a job or the absolute, you know, being worked to death and collapsing almost, you know. I mean, the beginning when he goes down in and sees the steam plant or whatever explode. It's like, that's just someone not, you know, being able to keep up and causing the whole accident. Yeah.
I think, you know, you hit on something, and I threw it on the show notes to talk about here. It is there is a big difference between watching a talkie, you know, that we're used to, and a silent film. As much of a big difference as there is in acting it or in writing, directing, and producing it.
Oh, yeah.
You can't tell a story with words. And you're limited in how much you can act because you can't speak. So you do have to overact in a talkie to show, because you can't convey excitement or dramaticism with words and tone of voice. You have to act it. And as I was watching this, I kept thinking over and over again, William Shatner was born a generation or two too late, because he could have been the king of the silent movie era with his histrionics. But
well, it's also interesting you mentioned that, because very few silent movie actors and actresses managed to transition into talkies because it was a completely different style.
Yeah, you mute down the physical
action.
I mean,
there were
doing.
Obviously some, but not all. Not all by any stretch. It's a completely different art.
Well, and I think too, in movies, we know it's show, don't tell. And that's a big problem we have today with films, is where they over explain things. Because,
you mean the dialogue scenes that are there just to give you the backstory or something?
Yeah, or just to over explain the point that, you know, honestly, I could have made that implication. If you could have just implied that, you could have just implied by showing me, but instead I mean, the greatest example of this, I think, is Suicide Squad, where they went to great lengths to explain to you, we have to kill the heart of the Enchantress to get her done. And then after the heart was cut out, they stopped to give you another point of the heart's out, we can end this. Wait, you spent the whole time explaining and showing why that's key, and then you slowed it down again to tell me the heart is key. It's really, you must think I'm stupid. Whereas in the silent, it's all show. So you have to, it's just, you have to show. It's,
well, I would agree, except here's, this film has the same issue, I think. That it, again, beats you over the head over and over and over and over again with the same message.
It's going to do that because it's so long.
The mediator between the heart, the hands and the heart, the hands and the head must be the heart.
Oh, yeah. I heard that so many times.
Can we talk about this?
You know, actually, before we jump in, can I mention the influences?
Go ahead.
Because the it's obviously influenced other creators just in the way it was made. If you look at Forbidden Planet later on, it was the cityscape was molded after that. If you look at C-3PO, I think we can all say that the Machine Man got a lift from C-3PO.
Observation about the Machine Man? When making your machine robot, make sure to give it giant boobs so people know it's a machine robot female.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was clearly a C-3PO comes from that.
Obviously, because he's the male version. You took away the boobs.
Yeah. Dystopian futures, at least not where like Terminator, but where you have a stratification, gets a cue from this. So we could at least respect the influence it had on other work that came along. And I like to do that.
Well,
so,
again,
I feel like there's a Star Trek episode, the Cloud Minders, where, you know, you've got the troglodytes toiling in the mines for the people living in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
It probably was very much influenced.
This is one of, I wouldn't say the original sci-fi movie, but this is one of them.
Yeah.
It's
an early one for sure.
Yeah, it's one of the earlier sci-fi movies.
So they get to be, but they could have been a stupid one where it didn't influence anything. But the angles, the way they portray the city, heck, Coruscant can take a page from this. So right there, that Coruscant and other sci-fi cities take a page from this. So yeah, just being the early one doesn't mean it's influence. I mean, if you look at what is it? I believe the Earth to the Moon. The moon has a face and smiles at you. The only time I know they've ever done that is in the video game Majora's Mask. And most people admit that was creepy.
Yes. Yes.
Ugh. Plus, it wasn't science fiction. It was just weird.
Why did you have to bring up weird things?
Well...
All right, so let's dig into the symbolism of this, because this movie is all symbolism.
Laden with it.
Yes.
Oh, full of it.
You have your mantra that you have to keep in mind through this whole thing. The mediator between the head and the hands has to be the heart.
Yeah.
The head is obviously Frederson. You know, he's the white collar, you know, owner of the Capitol, and he's the one he's the head. He has the designs, he conceives it. The hands are the masses that are going to put his designs into practice.
And the head, by the way, is heartless.
The head is heartless.
Because when his son comes to him and says, Father, do you know what happened? There was an explosion and these horrible things are happening. And his father's response was, why am I hearing this from my son and not my personal assistant? Why am I finding out about getting these maps from the workers from a foreman and not my personal assistant? You're fired. Go get your pay and get out. And well, Father, what about the workers? They're where they belong.
Well, I you could also say the workers are heartless too. They're just doing this. You know, there's no entertainment. There's no fun.
They're numb. They're numb.
Right.
I think there's a difference though, because they're just numbed. This guy is just flat out depicted as cold, heartless businessman, plain and simple.
I'm saying you could say both sides are heartless.
Yeah, that's true, but for different reasons.
Yes, I'm not saying that it's the same reason. I'm saying both could be considered as heartless, hence why you need again, I'm only saying this because this movie's trying to place this symbolism in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this idea of being you need a heart on both sides.
But I don't
to mediate.
I don't know, because later on they're super impassioned and they're like, not to jump too far ahead, but their unbridled passion run amok later on. So that's where the heart would come in to stop the hands from going too far. I think that's,
well, you could also say, yes, they're, you know, passionate and stuff, but again, they're heartless because they leave their children.
And I feel
things like that, you could say it's heartless.
Okay.
And I feel this is where, you know, this movie, I jokingly said this movie is brought to you by the Comintern, you know, with the stamp of approval of Stalin and Chairman Mao. But this movie, you know, we hinted at it. It's 75% a communist propaganda film that could have sprung right from Marx and Engels. But that ending, you watch the communist revolution
destroy itself.
Destroys itself. It eats its own tail, you know, it eats its own head. They kill their children, leaving no future for their children. They kill the machines. They kill the machines. They kill themselves. They flood their city.
They blow up their livelihood and flood their kids to death.
Right. It's almost showing you, you know, okay, so if the heart, if the head is heartless, are the hands brainless? Because they seed their own destruction. So it's almost telling you, okay, pure capitalism is no good. Pure communism is also no good.
Yeah.
So and that's where I think, you know, we said that it got some stamp of approvals from two of the most evil men of the century, because it kind of has some of that mix in there where they were ardently anti-communist and at the same time trying to realize that you have to build something for the middle class too to keep the common people happy.
Well,
is this really a communist propaganda film?
Well, I don't know. Okay. Jumping on that, I don't know if I would want to say that that Hitler and his crew were also, I'm pretty sure they were, it's a funny thing to say because they were anti-capitalist. Well, yes and no.
They were more anti-communist than they were anti-capitalist.
Yes. Well, and they were
fine with capitalism as long as it advanced what they wanted.
Yes.
As soon as it did not advance what they wanted, then state control.
And they were happy to say, they were happy to use capitalism as a fall guy for their Jewish conspiracies.
Correct.
So, but to get back to your point, Scott, yeah, it seems that way. Cause throughout it's tricky though. Cause throughout most of the movie, this is clearly yay communism.
Or at least yay workers.
Exactly. It's a pro labor movie for most of it.
And it's definitely anti-big business, anti-rich, right. Anti-elite.
Well, yes. Right, anti-upper class,
well,
because also the upper class kids are depicted as having these benefits and just frivol away their day.
Let's bring up a scene which would really show this, where he goes down into the depths and trades places with a worker.
All right.
The worker then gets the benefits of being rich.
Oh, yeah. And then he blows it.
Right. He's supposed to go back to this, you know, house and wait for. No, he goes, has money, you know, sees beautiful women, goes to parties, does all this stuff with all this money because he can.
It reminds me of the 1927 equivalent of the first episode of Altered Carbon, because he's in this car. And someone's just throwing down pamphlets for Yoshiwara, which was the red light district of Tokyo. And he sees it and he looks over at the beautiful woman next to him and is like, I want that. I want to go do that. I've never had that. And it reminds me of when the guy, I forget his name, in Altered Carbon, where he's walking around the red light district and just seeing hedonism splayed all over in holographic image. And except he doesn't jump into it. He doesn't dive in. But this, as you pointed out, Thomas, this worker does. Instead of just going back to the apartment and waiting, he's like, party on. Let's do this.
Oh, yeah.
And then it gets him in trouble.
Well, yes, but that's a perfect example of that choice. It's like, that is what the rich are doing.
Yeah.
It's nothing good, constructive or anything. It's showing or attempting to show just hedonism and terribleness. I mean, you have a garden scene at the beginning.
They're just playing around.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it it comes back to, there's definitely a motif over and over and over again, you know, the mediator between the head and the hands must be the heart. And is it trying to tell you that somewhere between our baser natures, and I think you see a clear dichotomy here, the overclass, the underclass of the baser natures and the stratification of society. Is it trying to tell you that both of those are failures, and the only way to really bring about a utopia is to balance the pragmatic side with the emotional side, or the pragmatic side with the base side, the instinct side, with a modicum of empathy, so that you can sit there and say, well, in this case, we do need to think on the higher big picture. And in this case, we need to think about how this impacts the granular level.
I would agree with you in some ways, because you can never, I would say not never, you should never base your decisions solely on one or the other.
No.
Because either you are living in the present, or you're, you know, not thinking of the present.
Is it almost, you know, is the lower class more of a representation of populism versus the upper class being more of an oligarchy and the status yes. quo that has always been, where the resources of society get funneled up to the top, giving the people who produce a subsistence? And you're trying to find a balance between this, because this movie is almost trying to tell you that you need the people at the top, and that if you're cutting off your nose despite your face if you take those people out.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. This is, you know, you said this is layers, Scott, and it is, because at one end, it is saying this is a hierarchy that can it be sustained at least to have any form of equity? Because clearly in this movie, what's missing? A middle class.
Yeah, there is.
And
none.
I think we can all agree, in order for any market or market-like system to work, you need a middle class. I was talking to my friend who owns a business, a successful one. I said, yeah, you need these rich investors. They are the engine, but the middle class is the gas. Because at the end of the day, yes, you made the company, but how many pairs of jeans are you going to buy to sustain an economy? Three? Whereas you need that middle, middle ground, and I get, maybe that's the hard I'm jumping. I could be dead wrong about that, but
This movie also, okay, hear me out before either one of you jumps on me, because I don't know if I'll explain this right.
All right,
this movie very much takes the aspect of the market is a certain size,
okay,
and in this idea, there's only so much supply. Most of it goes to the top.
Yeah, that's so far so good.
And it takes the idea of that's it. You can't grow the market. You can't grow and gain more, you know, resources.
Hmm.
It takes the idea of that the market is this very isolated. Like, there's only, let's just take an example, $100. 90% of it goes to, say, Mark here in this example.
Mm-hmm.
Then 5% goes to both me and Scott. So you have $90, we both have five. Well, in this movie's idea, that's it. That's all there is. You can't now take that, you know, $100 and make it $200 and then split it. It takes that idea.
All right.
I'm saying that idea is very much a communist idea. It's taking the idea of the workers. And again, when this came out, this is also a very important point. When this came out, this was before World War II.
Mm-hmm.
This was still in the era where it was golden. You know, communism was still in its infancy.
Yeah.
Everyone thought communism was good. Quite a few people around the world thought communism was good.
Yeah, there was still a belief that it could be an equalizer, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Right. And you, like, this came out at a time when communism was in its golden era. Its infancy, but also its golden era. Where you have,
you're still in a sweetheart phase, really.
Exactly. This is before people started finding the flaws in it and seeing, you know, where it didn't work so well. So being that this is it, I think it took the sweetheart look at communism, because again, we hadn't yet gotten to the point where we at all look at communism as we do now. I mean, you say communism now and you think Soviet Union, gulags, right. You know,
North Korea,
China. You're thinking of prison camps. You're thinking of re-education. You're thinking of mass slaughter of civilians. You're thinking of all that.
They didn't have that under their belt.
Right. At we this have time, this was, you know, again, you had the Soviet Union, which was the first, you know, people's revolutionary government and all this. And it's like, oh, look, they're doing well. And, you know, again,
from an outsider perspective, yeah.
Golden. It looked, everything was crisp, clean, good. So it's like, I think this was also a product of the time that socialism and the workers' effort was like, yeah. Right? And also, you have to admit, the economy wasn't doing so fantastic either.
In 27, it was starting to ebb off a little bit. But I think you're right. This is very much
stratification showing.
Yeah, this was very much a period piece that at the time, it was still a case of, well, maybe communism is a good thing. And with the benefit of hindsight, we can say, nope. But at that time, yeah. Now, was it talking about that you can't grow an economy? I'm going to say no, because these weren't economists. And then so I tend not to give filmmakers that much knowledge about such things. They're filmmakers, not sociologists, not social scientists, not economists, not historians. They're going to go with their art first and foremost. So that's why I would disagree, just because I sincerely doubt that the complexities of an economy would factor into him, to Fritz Lang and his wife, especially considering they had a very cut and dry view here of the tops, the city and the workers and the people at top. There wasn't much ground here for, you know, not every industrialist is an pre-philanthropic Andrew Carnegie or John D. Rockefeller, whose view is screw the worker, just do your job. There's lots of industrialists that, for all you know, if you came up and told them, yeah, you know, there was an explosion and a bunch of your workers died because the foreman was shoddy in the safety standards. I don't know how many, but I'm sure there are some that would be aghast and say, oh my God, we have to stop this. Not just for a PR stunt, but it's bad for your company.
Yeah, well, here's my thought. I think money only amplifies what is already there. If someone's a bad person and you give them a lot of money, they will just have a lot of money to be a bad person. They will have more power. More, you know, if someone's good and you give them a lot of money, there is a good chance they're still good. And I'm talking about the core, not the outside shell, the core of the person. If there's at the core, a good person, and you give them a lot of money, now they are a good person with a lot of money, being able to, you know, give that money to charities or something.
Mm-hmm.
And again, at the core. So I think money is an amplifier of whatever is there.
Could be.
So being that money amplifies what's there, is it? This movie is not saying that. It's stating it's very classist in some ways.
Yeah. But on the flip side,
it's stating, you know, the people above A are smarter in some ways.
It gives that this idea, because look what happens to the workers at the end.
It get very caught much, up. And, right. It very much points out that the masses do not have a brain in some ways.
Yeah, well, they find one.
And can
one.
Be controlled.
Yeah, they find one, and she just becomes a cult of personality and manipulates them.
Right. Like, they can be controlled. The masses can be controlled. So that's where this film is very complex and very confusing for me, because I look at it and go, is it saying communism is good? Because at certain points, it points out this message of the masses can be controlled. The masses can be influenced. The masses are not right. The masses will kill themselves. It's this point where you're like, this whole bunch of this is anti-communism.
And that's the tricky part.
I think it is an anti-communist movie in a way. I don't think this is a communist movie. I don't think it's a capitalist movie. I don't think it's a Nazi movie. Even though, you know, all elements of that could have found something in there that they could relate to at some point. I think this is a movie about, it's definitely a movie about income inequality. It's definitely a movie about class division.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you got to remember what we're seeing in 1927 when this film is made. We're
big
seeing
stratification.
An industrializing world, and we're seeing whatever middle class did exist being pushed out. You were really at this point in time, you're just coming out of the robber barons. You're just coming out of this point in time where wealth was even more concentrated than it is now. And you really were feeding the machines of progress your own blood. You know, that's the time when Andrew Carnegie would say, you lost a finger, you still have nine, you can work the machine, get back in the line.
Yeah.
And you were, you know, you had company talents going.
Right.
Yeah. You at the time, you really had stratification. You had the rich. And we're talking rich. Today's standards, paling, you know, rich.
The cobbler or the carpenter was being put out of business at this point.
Yeah.
The self-sufficient farmer, the self-sufficient craftsman, the artisan. You were seeing all of that had existed forever was really now finally getting the death punch. And it was going to be, you were going to be a specialist niche. If you were a furniture maker making hand, you know, even by then it was gone. But I'm saying you couldn't be an individual artisan anymore. And I think some of this movie is talking about the dangers of being crushed under the machine, the dangers of automation taking away any excitement in life. You see everyone walking to work with their head down, they're faceless, there's nothing distinguishing them.
Well, they're fed, in fact, the vision of that Freda has when the machine blows up and he suddenly sees Moloch, which is an ancient, I think it was Babylonian god, I'm not sure, but a god that was sacrificed, children were sacrificed to. And he pictures the machine
eating
as Moloch eating the workers, and there's just two priests who would, I guess, would be the foreman.
Huh?
And they're just getting fed into this machine.
Yeah. Well, again, symbolism right there. Beautiful symbolism of that.
So it almost sounds like they're trying to say, it almost sounds like Fritz or whomever is trying to say, look, we can't sustain this system because you can't say there's any degree of beneficial equity in this because there isn't.
Well, there's also there's also the question of the machine man, the future.
Yeah, the technology being used to control the masses.
And used to control the masses. Also,
and there is the upper class, in fact, because he gets them to fight each other over the woman.
Right. It's like showing that machines will be the controlling of the future, and showing the question that's brought up is this the future too?
Because the Skynet.
Right. It's like the idea of we will get rid of all the masses and replace them with machines.
And I think that's another goes back to the heart between the head and the hands. They make a sexy robot and people are going to kill each other over lust because they don't have heart and empathy and relation, and to see someone in the terms of love versus lust.
And and in fact, the seven deadly sins are portrayed in there. And that becomes an issue at the end of everybody. We are now just in the thrall of the seven deadly sins.
Yeah. It's showing
high and low.
Yeah. It's showing again that human nature is evil in many ways. And
flawed.
Human nature is flawed and you must be tempered. And the question is how you temper it.
And they would clearly argue the heart.
And they're arguing again that you should temper all three. It must be all three together.
I think where Fritz Lang would have come out on the political spectrum would have been more of the, it's going to sound crazy, but I want to say Teddy Roosevelt and the progressives and the guys who went trust busting and the guys who put in the first labor reforms in America.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I think you're right.
I think he wants a free market that is controlled and moderated. And in this case, the heart has to almost be the government. It has to be controlled and moderated because left to their own excesses, the capitalists will simply grind down. We'll use the term, we'll grind the proletariat down.
Yeah.
And feed them to the god of profits.
They are there where they belong.
Right. You are logs to throw in the fire of capitalism. And they will take everything up to their level, and they don't care what squalor they leave the workers in because they're just replaceable workers. And they're, you know, through their own social Darwinism, they're there. And I think Fritz Lang is saying, whatever. What he's saying is that, and then if you let the workers overthrow it, you know, they're going to destroy the system because they need people at the top to keep that system running. And they need what that economy is producing. And so you need the government almost to come in and moderate the excesses of both.
Because look at after they blow up the machine that floods them, they're hand in hand just dancing around while everything's crumbling around them. And on top of it, Freda is saying, not Freda, the Joe, the head is saying, Fredersen is saying, let him do it.
Now, I think both of you guys just pointed to the point that the fascists pointed to and said that's, I'm not saying they were right, but I think that is the point in this film that the fascists could point to and say, this is why we think it's ours.
And they were able to capitalize on that for their own benefit.
I joked that this film was brought to you by the Comintern, but if the Comintern had got this film, they would have cut the ending and redid the ending.
That's right.
Yes.
They'd have never let that ending go out.
No, they would have recut it as
the workers rise up.
They don't destroy the machine. They take it over. And then they all work together singing Kumbaya. And
everybody lives in the gardens and everybody lives in the taller, you know, the Tower of Babel that they're building, you know.
And then who knows what the machine man would be doing.
Yeah.
Going into space.
Something. And it's a weird film because it's the problem is that Fritz Lang never told us what he was trying to do. He just said he was sorry he created a film that Hitler thought was good.
Well, yeah, I could get that.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things you never want him to be on your side. You reevaluate your position immediately.
Yeah, but this is
I've got to be wrong.
Well, unfortunately, the fascists co-opted so much good stuff.
But still, it sucks.
Yeah, but I'm agreeing. Absolutely. It sucks that they co-opted stuff. It's like that's not, it's got the taint on it now. But the thing about this film is, you don't know what to do because this film is a very interesting one. And I honestly don't know if we can completely go and say what it means, because there are some things where it's like it's fascist elements. Sure, you can understand where they came from. Communist elements. Sure, you can understand that. You can understand all. It also even has Christian elements. I mean, you have two almost Christ-like figures going on. You have the son, and you also have, in some ways, the what's her name, Maria?
Maria.
She's almost a. You could debate either Christ-like or prophet,
but also Satan at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, when they
the robot version, yes, and this is the it has so many elements thrown in that it. I wish, and sometimes we say it doesn't matter what the creator was trying to say; it's what the audience has found in that work. In this case, I almost wish we knew what he was trying to make.
Yeah, I'm not really a fan of that.
I know you're not, Mark. Yeah. You loved whatever the maker says it is what it is. I know that you always say that.
Because it's, I mean, because I respect, as someone, if I were creating something for the same reason that Fritz Lang, when he found out the Nazis co-opted it, was obviously mortified. That's why I'm against it. Because although you might find something, it can turn into a, I didn't say that at all. Don't take my work and add something I find repugnant. I mean, in the same way that I can't think of an example, but you get the idea. I don't think we should shove our views on another author without at least getting their consent to say, yeah, I like the way you think about that. Well, I agree.
I think I'm going to say, I think there's a thing that can be said for this is what he meant to say, the artist, and then saying this is what the audience got. Yeah, it might not match.
To differentiate is fine.
Right. It might not match, or it might not even, it might match. But in this case, I wish that he would have expounded and tried to explain this film a little more.
Yeah.
Because since he does not really say what he's trying to say, it's all up to the audience. And because of that, it's like, I wish we knew what he was trying to say for the simple fact this might explain some of this film a little better and be able to go, ah, that's what he's trying to say. I now get it.
That would help. But
because at least when you have a genre of opinion, you can go back and go, okay, this is what he's trying to say. This is what the audience gets. I see. But you don't have that. You just have everyone interpreting this film how they want to interpret it. And it's just meh.
Yeah.
But I think because of that, you get so many different interpretations.
Right.
That, and this film has that ability because it's so many elements.
I almost wonder, you mentioned the Christ-like figures, if this is also a method of talking about how religion can be abused. I'm probably adding another layer that's not there, but
well, I mean, you could.
A religious experience is being abused, that's for sure.
Ooh, you could. You could. And here's the argument you could have for that. When she goes down there and talks about the Tower of Babel.
Yeah.
And then she also goes back to the same place when she's now the robot and uses the moral authority of, I guess, what you could consider the church.
Well, because the heart is the Messiah and she's using like authority to say, wait until the Messiah comes.
She could then be pushing for the action through the power of the church.
I feel like she's definitely John the Baptist.
Yeah.
To Fredder's Jesus.
Yeah.
Even though he's kind of self-appointed.
Yeah.
And by the way, as a Christian, let me explain. Any sickies, if you don't know the story of the Tower of Babel, they got it wrong. It wasn't the leaders who said, we can't possibly build this, make the workers do it. That's not why Babel fell. It fell because the languages were mixed. God mixed up the languages so they couldn't talk to each other and they all just gave up and left.
The Tower of Babel is a weird story.
It is, but I mean, it didn't happen that way.
Yes. Well, again, the Tower of Babel, I will agree with Scott, is a very weird story. And again, I can't exactly flaw this movie for saying it, giving it wrong for the simple fact. Sure, we're not, this isn't even, she's not even Christian, really, in some ways. You're co-opting a story. Again, it's not like this is a church. She's co-opting a story.
I feel it's definitely telling you calling out the potential dangers of religion as a motivating and controlling factor. You know, societies have always been organized around religion. It's the oldest, most effective organizing method out there. After the Roman Empire fell, the Catholic Church was the power of Europe for a thousand years.
Yeah.
You know, but there's so much in this film. Do we want to attempt to rate this film?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I say yes.
Let's do it.
Because we'll individualize what our perks were.
I'm going to give this film... Boy, this might be controversial, but I'm going to give it a 7.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot to discuss in this film. There's a lot to analyze. It's definitely a commentary on the human condition. I can't give it a higher rating because I'm uncertain what that commentary is. And in some ways, maybe that's the best part of this film is that it doesn't attempt to simplify human nature down to one ideology. It makes an honest statement that religion, capitalism, communism are all flawed and if taken to their own extremes will cause destruction. And that somewhere in between all of these competing ideologies, I don't want to say a pragmatism because they use heart, but an empathy for your fellow man or woman, your fellow human needs to be there to really create the society that we've been looking for all this time. It's never going to be found in dogma. There's a lot of lessons in here. Lust versus love, letting your passions overrun you, being too distant from your passions. I mean, look at Radawag, the inventor. I mean, he's goes insane trying to recreate a lost love.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about him.
No. There's so many different storylines going on in this, but it becomes too complex. And I think it's too long. It's, you know, it would have been a story that would be better served by scaling its ambition back, much like Star Trek V, and focusing on one of these aspects that you want to tell and not all of these aspects. You're trying to tell six different messages in one movie, and that's where I think it fails. But it's definitely influential. It's one of the pioneering films, period, of all time. And there's a reason we're still talking about a film made in 1927, 92 years later.
Sounds like we might have to do a supplemental on a few things.
Yeah. Okay, my rating on this, I'm going to agree. Way too long.
Yeah.
Especially being that it's a silent film. I'm sorry, but when it's a silent film, I really have to concentrate for 2 hours.
Well, folks back then had the skill to sit and watch.
Hey, what else were you going to do?
Yeah.
You going to go home and light the candles and read until you went to sleep?
Right.
The fire?
My point is, normally I'm able to watch a film and do something else, okay? I multitask normally. In this case, I couldn't multitask. Yes, I sat for 2 hours. Wow, I had the ability to do that, Mark. So I still have the ability.
Right, good job.
But I'm saying it's way too long. And it could have been cut down. It was cut down multiple times. And you are also right that there is so much to talk about. But I don't know what the final meaning was supposed to be. And I'm going to have to also give it a 7 out of 10 for pretty much all the same reasons you did. And it had some messages. It had some stuff in there. And we didn't even touch on some of it. And it's like, I don't know. But I would say it's a must watch. But I don't know if you can sit there and go, you need to watch this like multiple times. Oh, again, it's one of those films that once you've seen it, you've seen it. And you now have something to talk about, discuss. But I don't think I could definitely say it's influential. But I wouldn't say one of the best films ever or anything like that. 7 out of 10.
All right. Well, I'll give it a 7 or 8, depending on the day I feel. But I'm not going to go into the meanings because you guys pretty much covered everything I would say. I would say it gets that partially because the discussion it initiates is one that is always worth having. We always need to have that discussion that, while you can't make a level, you can't make everyone level at the same time, you could at least make the chances equitable and, or at least try to. And that's a good discussion to have. Otherwise, you're just replacing monarchy and nobility with money and money with something else. So the prolet with a Politburo, and then a Politburo you replace with the inner circle. You know, you're replacing one elite with another one. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. So there's that. But also, if we didn't really talk about it, and this is why I say a supplemental might be necessary one day, we didn't even talk about how we only briefly got on how the film looks. I think it looks amazing. I think it's one of those things that if I had money to burn, one of my wishes is always that I could, every time I open my wallet, it's $50 of any, or $100 of any currency I want, $100 worth of that currency. And, you know, if I say euros or yen or dollars, you know, and then specify the dollar, whatever, I would just sit there all day doing that. And then I would pay someone just to open my wallet all day until I had a house made of money. I'd try to bring back this art form. And why I say money to burn, because it probably wouldn't go anywhere, but at least I could say I tried. And who cares if I lose money? Give me 3 days. I'll make it right back by doing nothing. So, but you get my point. I think it looks amazing, especially the scenes with the Machine Man, the special effects with the Machine Man getting the Maria put into him and the machines themselves. And do they hold up? Well, for 1927, surprisingly, yeah. Considering when you look at some of the old effects, they clearly just look like crap by modern standards. And even though these aren't anything special by modern standards, they still look like, wow, that's pretty good. And that's because they didn't try to over the top it. You know, when you make the Machine Man, you can make a Machine Man that looks like it's made of metal. How do you screw that up? It's supposed to look like metal. And okay. Or the cities. They used actual skylines of real cities. Well, okay. That's, you can't screw that up. They showed cars in traffic. Okay. That's still around. So that's why I think it sticks. And also I like the style that invokes those emotions that make you think, or whoa, or, and that's adds to the experience. So probably more 8-ish, but somewhere in there. It's not by any means a perfect movie. So I yeah. think that's it for me on my rating. And Scott, what if they want to what if a sickie somehow feels like they want to contact us and leave another comment? What do they do?
Well, they can go to our website and leave us comments at our website at ravenlunaticmedia.com. Or while it's still active, you can find our Twitter account at Sci-Fi Malady. Or you can look up our inactive Instagram account at Raving Lunatic Media.
Why you'd want to do that, I don't know.
Because it's, you know, just a thing.
Okay.
You can also find Raving Lunatic Media on Facebook and like us there.
Oh.
What is left for them to do, Rage Master?
Stay sick, sickies.
So what do you think of that, Scrooge Master?
An interesting usage of effects for the time. No doubt it spawned other innovations in film. But the message is of a dubious nature.
We may not agree with that particular message, whatever it was, but science fiction has always pushed the boundaries of discovery and the human condition. It tries to tackle these deep human social conditions.
Quite the lecture there, Scott. Methinks you would have been better suited to the halls of academics or parliament. In the meantime, humbug, I say.
We'll see what you say after your next visit.
Oh, good gracious, there's more.